Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Five people died of drug overdoses last month. That is according to the Halliburton-Kawartha Pine Ridge District Health Unit. In 2021, 28 people died. That's more than double what it was only 2 years ago. Northumberland County has more suspected cases of drug overdoses than anywhere else in the health unit's coverage area. If you ask Dr. Natalie Bocking, the Chief Medical Officer of Health, she will tell you it is a crisis. Many would agree. The health unit's support of a harm reduction approach to the crisis has politicians upset. Earlier this week, Bocking was in front of County Council explaining the health unit's position. As councillors vented their frustration, Port Hope Mayor Olana Hankovinsky was the only member of County Council to try to take concrete steps during the presentation. She offered to seek the support of her council to help jumpstart a drug strategy with the health unit. In today's interview, you will hear Dr. Bocking explain the health unit's position. As well, she will address much of the misinformation and disinformation being spread by politicians and the public about harm reduction, overdose prevention sites, and what can and cannot be done. I'm so pleased to have with me today Dr. Natalie Bocking, Chief Medical Officer for the Halliburton-Kawartha Pine Ridge District Health Unit. Welcome back to Consider This.
Thanks very much for having me.
Let's get right to it. In the dealing with the local opioid crisis, there are a lot of moving parts. There are the police, there are mental health services, the hospital, so on and so forth. What role does the health unit play in addressing the use of opioids and other illegal drugs within Northumberland County?
Thanks for that question. So as you've pointed out, this is a complex issue that doesn't have one solution to it. Historically, organizations have approached the harmful use of substances in terms of the four-pillar approach. And those four pillars include prevention, treatment, harm reduction, and community safety, which is also sometimes referred to as enforcement. So health units, specifically, our work lies in the areas of prevention and in the area of harm reduction. So when I think about prevention, we're talking about upstream things. We're talking about parenting supports, school health programs, broader community health promotion, health education related to decreasing stigma, this sort of thing. And then when we talk about harm reduction, there's a whole suite of different programs and practices that we promote, and we also are responsible for delivering. So this includes needle distribution programs and services, ensuring that there are locations to return used needles, the naloxone distribution program. We also have a role in terms of surveillance, so data collection. And on our website, we have a data dashboard that speaks to the number of overdose presentations at emergency departments to give us a sense of whether or not there's anything increasing. Do we need to be worried about what's in the drug supply so we can issue alerts and warnings to the communities or any other changes? And then the last role I'll flag related to the health unit's role is in supporting community coalitions and in supporting bringing different sectors together to have a coordinated response. Again, that we know that there's not one solution to this problem, but it's nice to, or it's more effective certainly to bring all of our groups together to be working towards one shared goal.
On your website, it says that the health unit promotes harm reduction programs and services. Now, you've talked a bit about how that works, but One of the areas that you spoke about is education. That is making people aware of harm reduction efforts within the county. Can you be more specific and talk about what that entails?
So we have, when we talk about education, there's multiple different, I think, audiences to education. And we can talk about very specific targeted education, which might, for example, occur with community groups if we're asked to come and present to community groups. If we talk about substance awareness in terms of education in the school setting, when we talk about awareness related for education staff, when we talk about awareness for our partner municipalities, and then we talk about general education. So in terms of our website and our social media page, where we might be sharing resources that people can access to learn more about harm reduction. We might share links to speakers or to other documents put out by other organizations that speak to what harm reduction is and what the evidence is for harm reduction and why we support it.
What about, though, helping people to understand the individuals involved, what's involved with addictions, how as a community we might be wanting to respond? What about that aspect of the education? Where does that fit in?
Mm-hmm. I think we partner with many different organizations that are, I think, are well positioned to do some of that education. So, for example, we partner with PARN, the Peterborough AIDS Resource Network, to that actually works directly with individuals and works with the community groups involved in supporting those individuals. Public health often takes a bigger picture population lens. So we're looking less at the individuals and more at the overall population, and then groups within the population, and specifically those groups facing health inequities. And we know certainly that the community that faces challenges related to harmful substance use experiences many health inequities. So we'd be looking at broader population groups and less about the individual. That being said, I think that we know that individual stories and experiences are often very effective at sharing with people the real experience of what harmful substance use is like and what the real solutions are to be able to support them in their journey.
The health unit offers free naloxone kits and needle exchange program. You mentioned that earlier in our conversation. First of all, for those who may not know, what is a naloxone kit and how does it help?
So naloxone is a medication that will temporarily reverse the effects of opioids. So opioids are a type of drug. You can think about morphine, codeine, oxycodone, fentanyl. They're all part of a family of medications called opioids. And if you take too much of an opioid, it can cause you to stop breathing, or your breathing to become much slower, your heart rate to get slower. And certainly if there's too much of it, it can cause death, it can cause you to stop breathing. So naloxone is a medication, almost like an antidote to opioids. You'll see it used in hospital if somebody receives too much of an opioid medication. And if for individuals that might be using opioids as street drugs, then naloxone is a medication we can use to prevent them from dying from overdose.
How hard is it to use a naloxone kit? Do you have to be specially trained to use one?
So we offer training, and the majority of naloxone kits that are currently available is what we call intranasal naloxone. So it's a spray that goes in the nose. Very easy to use. Individuals, if it's being given to an individual, they might receive a few minutes of training if it's in a short interaction, or you can go to broader courses on how to use naloxone, but does not require extensive training to use naloxone.
Now, what is a needle exchange program? And again, how does it help?
So needle, and I often refer to it as needle distribution programs, because essentially, these are programs that are providing sterile equipment. So that could be the needle itself. It could be inhalation equipment. So the equipment needed to inhale drugs. It could be the equipment used to help filter drugs. Any of the pieces of equipment that somebody might be using to prepare their drugs and then ingest, inhale, inject their drugs so that it's sterile. And the key that there's many benefits of that. We know it certainly can prevent bacterial infections for the person that's actually using the drug, but it can also prevent the spread of bloodborne infections such as HIV and hepatitis C. So the point of that program is that people that use drugs will have sterile equipment so that it's promoting their health and ensuring that we're not spreading any potential infections between people that might be sharing equipment. The other part of that program is that there's an opportunity then to dispose of equipment in a sterile fashion so that it's not left around. The program does not require like a one-to-one exchange, whereas if we give you a needle, you have to send a needle back. We just want people to have sterile equipment at any time they might be using substances.
Some people might wonder that these efforts are actually encouraging people to use drugs, not dissuading them. How do you respond to this?
So I think we can look at the evidence. And the evidence is that these programs globally have been in place for decades, and they have never been shown to either increase drug use, to encourage drug use for people that are not currently using drugs. What we do know from the evidence is that they do decrease the spread of bloodborne infections, and they help to keep those individuals safe, and also often link them to other resources such as detox or treatment options.
When you talk about the naloxone and the needle exchange, there's this feeling that we're giving the people the drugs, or that they're injecting them, or helping them take their drugs. Can you explain what actually takes place? I'm just trying to get a clear picture in my mind, you know, how it might work just practically, and mm-hmm. whether or not there's this actual helping somebody take the drug.
Mm-hmm. So harm reduction programs aim to decrease the harms associated with substance use. The programs, so needle distribution programs, naloxone programs, consumption services, such as supervised consumption sites, they do not provide actual drugs or substances to individuals. Individuals will have gotten their substances from whatever means they would typically do to get those substances. Certainly in the case of needle exchange programs or naloxone distribution programs, the individual might not be using in the presence of where that program is. But in the case of consumption services or kind of supervised consumption sites, then the individual uses their own substances at that site in the presence of another person, where that other person would be trained to give naloxone should they overdose.
All right, which transitions nicely into the next topic I wanted to talk to you about, and that is the health unit's position on the current initiatives by local groups to offer an overdose prevention site. Where do you stand on this, and are you collaborating with this group?
So we are not formally collaborating with this group, although I think what's important to know is that groups that work directly with people that are using substances are incredibly important to inform the type of work that the health unit is doing and what that other health services should be doing. The health unit, or the role of public health, is to use data and evidence to protect health and promote health. We know that overdose prevention sites prevent death and other harms from substance use. And so certainly in principle, we support harm reduction initiatives, and we acknowledge that there's a very important role for overdose prevention sites in preventing death and harms from substance use.
Do you endorse the overdose prevention site?
I endorse overdose prevention sites as a key form of preventing overdose deaths.
What about this group that's working in Coburg right now specifically?
So I support them in principle. I support the public health approach to harm reduction. I don't know the individuals involved in organizing this initiative, and we don't have a formal partnership. So I think it's difficult for me in principle to say we endorse a specific initiative when we haven't been involved with it. But I do know that there is good evidence and data from other overdose prevention sites in Canada to support that they have an important role to play in preventing overdose deaths.
Many people, when they talk about this, will use the terminology illegal and unsanctioned. How do you feel about that approach?
I would say it's not consistent with a public health approach to substances. And I would say that it is not using the evidence that we know will work towards supporting individuals with substances. We know that approaching this from a legal standpoint will not improve the situation. The Public Prosecution Service of Canada has said that they are not charging people for simple possession. So the legal system and the criminal justice system has said that charging people for simple possession is not a way out of this crisis. It doesn't work. It's not getting at the root health issue. And as such, by focusing on whether these sites are illegal or sanctioned, loses sight of the fact that they're attempting to prevent overdose deaths. And at the root of this is a health issue and a public health issue.
The Social Services Committee of Northumberland County Council leveled a number of criticisms about the health unit's position on overdose prevention sites. How do you respond to this criticism when you heard it?
I think we fundamentally come back to what our shared goal is, and that is that we're supporting individuals to access treatment when they can, and otherwise to help keep them healthy as best as we can. And I do think we have that shared goal. The next step is, how do we get to that goal? And there's many misunderstandings about what harm reduction is, and we're always happy to have those discussions and conversations. So to me, I look at this as more of an opportunity to have these conversations. I'm glad people are asking questions, because this is how we get to moving forward and collaborating for programs into the future.
I agree. There's a lot that has been said, and there appears to be a lot of misinformation and disinformation being spread about harm reduction. What are the items you feel are most misunderstood that people need to know when talking about harm reduction?
So one of the biggest ones, which you mentioned earlier in the program, is the misunderstanding that harm reduction enables substance use, that it's supporting a habit and letting people continue on in a certain way of life. And we know that that's not the case. Providing people with sterile equipment so that they don't get bloodborne infections is not enabling use. And preventing somebody from dying from an overdose is not enabling use. The second misperception that's common is the idea that having harm reduction programs around will somehow increase the number of people in the community that are using substances and increase the number of needles discarded. And it's actually the opposite that's true. We know that harm reduction programming, including supervised consumption sites, will actually decrease the number of discarded needles or discarded drug use equipment. And it will likely decrease the number of individuals using in public places because there's more linkages to healthcare and detox and treatment options. So I think there's a often a bit of a gut reaction of fear. And if this is here, people will see it, more people will come and move here because we have this. But that's not the case. And certainly evidence from places internationally, Australia, from nationally, for example, in British Columbia, have demonstrated the opposite.
Does any of the politics that goes on in moments like this influence the health unit's position? I mean, would there be a scenario where the county could change the health unit's policy towards harm reduction?
No, as I mentioned before, harm reduction is written into the Ontario Public Health Standards. It's part of our requirements that we must do. And I think further to that, we have a mandate and an ethical responsibility to ensure that we're supporting evidence-based programming and policy development. So our position, I mean, harm reduction has lots of evidence to support it. It's an important function. It's one of a comprehensive way to approach harmful use of substances. So harm reduction is not the only part of this puzzle, but it's certainly the part that gets a lot of conversations and a lot of people interested in talking about it.
Does Northumberland County need a safe injection site? In other words, an approved legal place where people can go to safely use and be supported in their drug use?
Well, that's an excellent question. And the short answer is, I don't know at this point in time, right? I think that there are a number of things that we can do to find an answer to that question. Typically what we would, the first step would be a needs assessment and engaging with individuals that use substances to determine, you know, would they come to a site? What sort of services are needed? What are the numbers that we're looking at? In Ontario, the approved consumption and treatment sites are largely in populations of supporting an area greater than 100,000 people. So Northumberland County, when we look at the larger cities, such as Coburg and Port Hope, doesn't have that same population size. But that doesn't mean that there's not other ways that we might be able to approach this, right? At one end of the spectrum is a fixed site consumption and treatment services like what we see in Peterborough with many resources attached to it. But for smaller, more rural areas, maybe smaller sites, mobile sites, there's other options that we could look at along that spectrum to say what makes sense for our communities and what would the people that are impacted by substances like to see to support them.
How then do we address the issue? Because if we want to bring people to the table, that's been done before. We put people around the table. We talk about this at a bureaucratic level all the time. This is not new for people like yourself or the police or mental health services or the hospital. You guys talk about this all the time. The question I have to ask is, what's going to get done at this juncture? What is going to get done that's going to be different so that people that are addicted are getting the help and support that they need, at the same time easing the fears and concerns of everyday citizens?
So I don't know that I can answer that with one solution, because there's certainly the pieces that the health unit can play, but this has to be a collaboration. This has to be working across sectors with partners and with the community.
But if we're working in fear, we're working with misinformation. When people are talking about this as being illegal and needs to be stopped right now, how do we break the logjam so that we can advance this? Do you have any ideas around that?
There's not a magic answer. I think I've figured that out. Other than sometimes this is having the same conversations over and over and over again, and that's okay. We'll continue to have those conversations because we do incrementally move forward, and we do need to have a sustainable approach. right? We don't want this to be having to reinvent the wheel every 3 to 4 years. We need something that will stick and that will move forward. There's certainly nationally, when we think about more progressive policies related to, for example, decriminalization. So there are other things in the work, in the works kind of at a national level. It's taken decades to get to the point where we have funded consumption and treatment sites. So in a slow moving world, perhaps we're making incremental improvements and moving there, but I know that that's not fast enough for the individuals that might be using currently and are at risk of overdose.
From your perspective then, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being very little, 10 being extreme, how urgent is this?
That's a very, very challenging question. I'm not sure that I could ascribe a number to it, but I would put it on the more urgent side of things that requires attention now and requires people to work collaboratively to provide solutions.
More than 8?
10 was the worst, right?
Yes.
Yes, somewhere between 8, around 8 is an excellent, is a good ballpark number.
Dr. Bocking, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Well, thanks for having me on the show.
That was Dr. Natalie Bocking, Chief Medical Officer for the Halliburton-Kawartha Pine Ridge District Health Unit. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.